You're listening to the Farmyard Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? And our Patreon supporters.
Episode 2, Biodynamics Demystified, Part 1, with host Linda Borge and guest Abby Porter.
Hello, everyone. How are you today? Linda Borge here from Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? Here we are. It's a glorious day, really glorious day in the spring, April, here in Beaufort, South Carolina. And it's so funny how you schedule your day around the weather come the spring. Abby Porter and I were just speaking about that. Everything goes around whether it's going to rain or not. Very exciting time. The individual that you guys are going to meet today, I've had a relationship with for, I think, probably close to 10 years, but I'll ask her if she can remember. And, she has a wealth of knowledge in biodynamics. So as I do with all the podcasts, let me read you her biography. Abby grew up on a biodynamic cow and goat dairy farm in northeast Pennsylvania. Inspired by soil scientist Ehrenfried Pfeiffer, her mother, Josephine Porter, started making the biodynamic preparations after attending her first biodynamic conference in 1947. She became secretary, treasurer, and preparation maker for the National Biodynamic Association in 1956, 61 years ago, by the way, and continued to provide preparations to farmers and gardeners until her death in 1984. Abby accompanied her mother at conferences and attended Dr. Pfeiffer's lectures during the 1950s and 60s and helped her make the biodynamic preparations periodically until 1983. After a 30-year career in the jewelry arts, Abby returned her biodynamic roots in 2001 when she moved to West Virginia and tried to grow a garden on the poorest soil she had ever seen. In 2011, she became editor and writer for Applied Biodynamics and joined the board of directors of the Josephine Porter Institute for Applied Biodynamics, serving for 5 years. Abby continues to write for Applied Biodynamics and consults and gives workshops on beginning biodynamics for the backyard gardener. So let's bring our guest, Abby Porter, on. Hey, Abby, are you there?
Hi, Linda.
Hey, honey bunches of oats. How are you?
I'm good today.
You're good today. Who knows? It's minute to minute, you know? We talk about planets, you know, biodynamics has a lot to do with planets. And are there 5 of them retrograde, Abby?
Oh, I don't know, but there's a bunch of them right now.
There's a bunch of them. So they're going a little bit backwards instead of going forward. So it's like kind of like a little clog in the wheel, right, Abby?
Yeah, a little harder to get things done on time. And technology is a little contrary too.
Well, that whacks out with Mercury, and that's that, you know, that planet of communications.
We finally got together.
We did. I mean, this has been since April 5th. April 5th is when we started, because today I pulled up the emails and back and forth. But I'm really happy and I'm very glad and grateful, Abby, that you're taking this time with us, because I know that, especially this time of year, time is so valuable and it's such a premium, you know, everything's happening at the same time. So I know, and I know the work you've done to promote biodynamics. I mean, how could you not have, you know, with growing up with your mom, your mom, Josephine Porter. So you know what I would like to do? I'd like to start out having the listeners understand how, why, and when BD started.
That was, do you want to have like, what is it first?
So yeah, they have in whatever order you feel appropriate.
Yeah. I thought it would be good to give like kind of an overview what it is, yeah, and then go into why it started, when, and how it started and evolved and got up to where we are today.
That sounds like a great plan, and I just want everyone to know that we will record this podcast for about an hour, not on a time clock, and this is going to be a series with Abby, the same as with Evan Foles, the soil doctor, teaching us about soil biology and microbes. The same will happen with Abby, because both of them have such a depth of knowledge. There's no way we'd have to be talking about this to get it all in an acceptable period of time. So I just wanted everyone to know that this will be an episode type of podcast with us, Abby.
And I need to add that you are never done with biodynamics. It's an ongoing process, ever learning, ever observing, ever developing. So you could spend lifetimes learning and there would still be more. It's never a finished done deal.
Never, never, never. That's what Dr. Steiner told us. He told us in the agriculture course, more or less, in my verbiage, Lindaology, I suppose. You know, here is the information up until this moment in time. But now you have to go forward and continue this research. Am I correct in that, Abby?
He did, and he also said, don't believe me or anyone else. Don't make anyone your guru. Do your own research. Make, you know, your own observations and come to your own truth.
Yep. So why don't we begin at the beginning? Go ahead, honey.
Okay. Well, first of all, biodynamics. What is biodynamics? And probably the easiest way to begin is that it incorporates all of organic, but takes it to the next level, and also incorporates the aspects of permaculture. So it has a lot in common with those things. It actually preceded organic, and a lot of the concepts and practices in organic were originally derived from biodynamics. Some of the differences, though, is that in biodynamics, we view the farm or the garden as its own individuality, having its own ecosystem. And it's kind of viewed as a self-closed loop, self-contained organism, with the farmer and gardener being part of that whole organism. Diversity of crops, diversity of habitat. It's good, and actually in the Demeter, the certification process for biodynamics, you're required to leave 10% of the land untouched to provide habitat for beneficial insects and for birds. And the benefit of that is that actually reduces the pests that cause damage, because you have the birds and the beneficials there. And then
So let's talk about the farm as an organism. I always found that to be probably one of the most interesting concepts that I learned in biodynamics. So the way I see the farm as an organism means that everything that the farm needs has to come from within itself and not from outside itself. Is that correct, Abby?
That is the ultimate goal. And actually, it was probably much easier to do that the way farms were in the early 1900s, mm-hmm, when there were larger farms and all the farms had animals and right. They had, you know, large families or a lot of, you know, help doing a lot of the work. It's more challenging to do it. And certainly for farming yard, where you're doing very small plots, but you can make adaptations. You know, the goal is having a closed loop system where you provide all of the fertility within that organism, all your feed needs for your animals, all, and everything is recycled, and then, you know, that becomes the fertilizer for the soil.
Well, actually, in Walker Valley, I mean, I have never had enough property to be certified biodynamic because I never had enough property to keep a cow. And then to have enough, you know, I would have to grow its feed. But at one point in time, I believe it was Demeter that had called me. They said that they were working on a different type of certification, that it would be for someone like myself, that other biodynamic farmers would determine if I was following the principles of biodynamics without the elements of a cow.
Yes, they do have a peer-to-peer.
Peer-to-peer, that's it, right.
Which is, you can do it that way if you're not putting your products on the national market.
Gotcha, okay.
But there are, you know, examples of how, you know, they've worked around it. Like in California, there's vineyards. Well, they don't have space for cows or for
right.
other. So, adjoining landowners bring their sheep in and they, you know, graze in the vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
So it brings in that animal element, the fertilizer, yeah. And then, you know, they fertilize, they compost all of the debris from making grapes, and they may bring in some manure from an organic farm.
Right.
It isn't as strict, and there has been accommodations acknowledging that, mm-hmm. you know, the farms are just not the way, it's not practical and or even possible if you don't have the acreage to meet that goal of everything being produced on your farm. But you can do a lot because composting and cover crops and crop rotation can provide a lot of fertility.
An awful lot of fertility.
And frankly, on my place, I wish I had used cover crops and green manure crops for a couple years before I even started to plant anything. I just did not realize how bad the soil was. I planted potatoes the first year, like, you know, a 20-foot row or more.
Yeah.
I got a gallon of little potatoes that were about the size of my pinky.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a fertile valley.
Right.
You know, my mother didn't even need to put compost on every year because that's one of the things. The longer you farm biodynamically, the less amendments you need. The soil becomes deeper and more fertile and more full of microorganisms. And mm-hmm. so the plants are able to get more of their nutrition from the air, from
right.
the sun, from the planetary radiations coming in, you know, from the whole cosmos. I mean, you know, we and plants are basically energy.
Mm-hmm.
There was a physicist who said if you took all of the space in, you know, all the atoms and subatomic particles in the human body, that the actual physical substance would fit on a sharp end of a pin.
Oh, dear Lord.
So that's how physical we are. So it makes sense that, you know, we are energetic beings primarily. I mean, there's people now who have been living 20 years without eating anything. They live on air and sunshine.
Breatharians.
So, you know, anyway, on with that. So the cover crops, compost, crop rotation, these are all basically incorporated in organic now.
Yes, they are.
And companion planting. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can, you know, plant, like, you know, going back to indigenous cultures, the Three Sisters.
Yes.
You have legumes that supply fertilizer for the corn and the squash.
Yeah.
And they each take different things out of the soil, and they each put different things into the soil, so you're not depleting the soil. And that's one of the things with the crop rotation. You want to rotate your crops in a way so that the crop is actually supplying things that a previous crop took out.
Most definitely. And you know, what I say now, because being at this gig here, you know, for 30 some odd years, right? Mm-hmm. What I see now is that we have mass amounts of people that don't have any skills in this area. I mean, right now, we're graduating students from universities that don't even know how to boil an egg, nor balance a checkbook. So we have to relearn those skills. And that's what Farmyard, I mean, that's the movement. That's the Farmyard movement, is to make those skills readily available to everyone so they can go from knowing nothing to success right from the get-go. So it's, these are all skills. I mean, there was a time when farmers could just tell the change in temperature by a half a degree. Mm-hmm. But we've lost those instincts because we're not using them anymore. You know, it's like if you don't use it, you lose it. And if we're not teaching it, if this generation that we have now wasn't taught how to grow a tomato, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or how to can some jam, then how are they even supposed to know the questions to ask in order to feel confident enough to go and do that successfully, right?
That's true. It's a really sad state of affairs. There's just a total, you know, for most of the population, there's been a total disconnect from the rhythms of nature for how to do things. You know, boy, we have two generations that only knows how to microwave food. They don't know how to cook from scratch. And there was an interesting book, Thinking Like a Plant, where Craig Holdridge actually says that the reason for our environmental crisis is the disconnect that we have from nature. Because if you know nature, you love nature, you can't harm nature. And that science itself is disconnected. They take things out of the context of the whole living system, and they get a little tiny picture of it, but it's not the whole picture, and it's not accurate because it doesn't include the whole system. I mean, that's, Steiner said something like that too. He said, if you cut off a finger of a person and analyze it, you're not going to understand the human being.
Correct.
And he said, if you take a bee out of its environment, you can study it and you can, but you don't, without knowing the soil that it grows in, the climate, the weather and everything, you don't have a full understanding of why that bee is the way it is.
And just look how impoverished our food system is. I mean, it is, you know, I keep repeating that if you haven't listened to the podcast, The Seedy Story, please do so. I did a review of the documentary Seed, The Untold Story, and I just can't get those percentages out of my head. Now, you know, I've been defending the seed for 30 years, and, but to have it right there in black and white that we've lost 92% of all our vegetable varieties, they're gone, never to return again.
And that is just so sad.
Oh, dear God, because in one century.
That is. I mean, it's It's tragic. It really is tragic. But while we're on the subject of seeds, one of the things I want to say that, you know, as far as having your whole closed loop system, and it's not possible to do with everything and probably not in the beginning, but saving seeds is a really important task because your seeds will actually get stronger every year with the practice of biodynamics. Maybe not, you know, other systems where you're importing the fertility. But, you know, if you look in your garden, it's always the weeds that are stronger than any seeds you import into your land. They have been there growing in that energy field, in that climate, in those soil conditions for many, many generations. So they're strong. They've adapted. But if you buy seeds every year, you know, they've been grown in a different area of the country. They are not really in resonance with your geo region.
Right.
Now, I mean, I have to be honest. I save a few seeds. That's easy to do. And, you know, sometime I'm going to get more involved in it because I think it's going to become more and more critical.
I believe so. I do believe so. I don't know if you're aware that in the 1890s, I think it was 1890, the federal government gave out 1 billion packets of seeds to farmers, and they kept doing so year after year until the 1920s when they felt it was best put in the hand of, you know, private enterprise. And that's where the beginning of the end came from because, you know, whomever is in control of the food is in control of the people, and whoever has the seed controls the food. So, I mean, you know, it's like oxymoron, but it doesn't mean that we can't turn this food train wreck around because we can turn it around through knowledge in seed saving, knowledge in composting, vermicomposting, bat houses and canning and, you know, because food and farming right now is very fluid. Things are moving, you know, we've gone from, you know, hectares and hectares and hectares of corn and soy to feed animal protein to a consciousness that we've got this 48.5 million acres of turf grass, you know, that is doing nothing because nobody's eating it. So let's turn it into food. So it's like a new age for biodynamics, for backyard farmers to start stirring and spraying. Like things like the biodynamic preparations and compost tea in a box, you know, microbemakers.com and Josephine Porter Institute.org. These are the places where we want to send you because we know that once you start with this process, and like Abby said, you know, anything is a commitment. We have to make a commitment to it, you know, a commitment to ourselves to eat nutrient dense food and a commitment to ourselves that we could do this. It's not really, you know, I want you to say when you get off this podcast, well, geez, if that 62-year-old grandmother with 4 herniated discs in her neck can farm a rocky mountainside by herself, and then her 5-year-old granddaughter is selling, she has a farm stand set up on her front lawn selling garlic. Well, maybe I can do that too because I'm somewhere in the middle. And that's where we want to get to, is to that energy field.
And, you know, gardening is like, it can be very meditative and restorative. And also growing your own high quality, nutrient dense food, you're growing, you know, your food is your medicine, and you won't be as sick. You won't be dependent on drug companies. You know, you will be providing your own health and your own medicine.
Yes. And there again, this food is growing where you live. So geographically, your body's going to take that into its nutrient stream differently than, let's say in the Northeast, me buying a watermelon in February. My body shouldn't be eating watermelon in February in the Northeast. So it's really a win-win-win situation. So biodynamics, let's tell them, why don't you explain the story of Dr. Steiner in 1924 when he was approached by those Austrian farmers?
Okay, I'm just going to wrap up with this, the seven principles of biodynamics. So we had.
Sorry, I cut you short, Abby.
Good for well, that. I'll just catch you. So anyway, we have the farm individuality, the organism, the kind of goal of the closed loop system, recycling all your materials, providing fertility on site, the cover crops, crop rotation, the diversity of crops, so you don't have the monoculture, which leads to pest infestation and soil depletion, and then water management, which is ever more critical now. And then the two main features that are very different than standard organic is the use of the biodynamic preparations, which stimulate the microlife in the soil, the beneficial fungi and bacteria, and improves the water holding capacity. Pfeiffer did tests. Dr. Pfeiffer, who's the one who brought biodynamics to this country, a biochemist, he did tests and determined that there were 10 times the microlife in a biodynamically treated compost pile compared to an organic pile. This is with the compost starter or the compost preps added to the pile. And the use of these preparations helps regenerate the soil much faster than would ordinarily be possible with straight organic. And then the last, the seventh principle, is working with the calendar to enhance life processes. And that is working with the constellations and the energy, using the energy of those constellations, using the energy of nature to enhance and strengthen natural processes that occur in the plants and the soil.
Abby, so, explain to them what the calendar is.
Well, the calendar was developed initially by indications from Steiner, but developed in Switzerland at the Gerdianum, and then Maria Thun made additional tests where she the moon, briefly, the moon goes through the same astronomical cycle as the sun goes through. The sun goes through all the twelve zodiac signs in the course of the year. Well, the moon goes through those 12 signs or constellations in the course of the 28 to 29 days in a month. And each constellation is, there's three constellations that are water signs, three that are earth signs, three that are air signs, and three that are fire signs. So if you're working with growing root crops, you would plan and do your tilling and harvesting when their moon is in front of a constellation that is an earth sign. And likewise, for if you wanted, working with fruits, which is all the vegetable fruits, beans, tomatoes, apples, pears, you would use the sprays, the biodynamic sprays, and work in the soil and do the tilling, planting, harvesting when the moon is in front of a fruit-bearing sign. And research, actually, Sherry, who developed the Stella Natura calendar, she was at the Gerdianum and was asked to replicate Maria Thun's results. And so she did that, but she sprayed intensively. She sprayed every week, according to the days and according to the crop. And there was I think it was about a 25% increase in production of the the beets and the beans and the fruits, and they were more beautifully formed and just, you know, have your way. And then in the calendula flowers, which she experimented on, they had already fallen to the ground and were growing new plants before she even got to harvest them. So, I mean, you could spray as intensively as she did, but, you know, it was done to really augment the process to see, well, is there an effect here? And there was. Now, the one thing I need to say about the calendar is that if you start off and you've had conventionally farmed land, you might not see much effect from the calendar. But the longer you farm biodynamically, the more the plants and the soil are tuned in to the cosmos, and they're more receptive to those influences and can take in and be nourished by those influences.
Well, you know, actually, the way I thought about it was this, because I've been on many different pieces of property, you know, all different shapes and sizes, from the side of a Rocky Mountain to here in Beaufort, South Carolina, that as long as I sprayed the Pfeiffer Field Spray, and the Pfeiffer Field Spray has all of the biodynamic preparations in it, and the reason why I always wanted to spray the Pfeiffer Field Spray was because it doesn't have a use-by date, okay? So, because generally I wouldn't need the whole package to spray it all at once, because I'm doing these small plots. And then after that spray is sprayed, that opens the cosmic doors. And now that allows those energies to re-enter. Because, you know, even with the moon, even before I knew anything about biodynamics, I planted by the moon. I mean, the monks, you know, they've got to know something. They grew beautiful gardens, the Benedictine monks, beautiful gardens. But then when I was introduced to biodynamics and I thought about all those other heavenly bodies, it just made sense that each of them had different energies that living things were drawing from. It couldn't just be the moon.
Right. Well, and we know through spectroanalysis, I mean, science knows that there are different, there's like a calcium frequency coming from, you know, a certain planet or constellation. There's, you know, all these different frequencies of minerals and, you know, all silica, all these different things are coming in, are bombarding our planet. And with biodynamics, the plant and the soil can utilize those. It's like, you know, it turns on a satellite dish to capture those frequencies. And, you know, there's a lot of energy and a lot of frequency we can't see. I mean, we can't see radio waves, we can't see microwaves, but we know they're there. And, you know, the preparation's kind of like, it's like a radio tuning it into that frequency.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating and it's amazing. And you don't have to understand how something works in order for it to work. And I know I repeat myself from time to time. My son tells me that enough on the phone. You told me that already, Ma. You told me that already, Ma. But, you know, 62, if I got naked and stood in front of a full length mirror, I know gravity exists. I know nothing about gravity.
Right. I don't even know that science knows how gravity and electricity work. I don't think they really know.
It's just very interesting. So, therefore, we don't have to know how it works or why it works. Just that it does work. And that one quote you mentioned earlier, from Steiner. I really like that. You know, don't take my word for it.
Right.
Do your own. It's your own deal.
Right. Have your own observations and, you know, come to your own understanding and your own knowing. you know, because otherwise you just accept things on blind faith. And it's, you know, then it becomes kind of a religion.
But, right. No guru. I mean, that's really important because this isn't a religion. It really isn't a religion. If it was, right, it would be the religion of anthroposophy. Because well, that is, that's the philosophy, of Steiner, right? But yet, if we look to Sekhem in Egypt, Dr. Ibrahim Abolish, you know, converting sand into humus in the Egyptian desert, they're Muslims. So it crosses company lines. You know, this is agriculture. And yes, it's agriculture of the spirit, but there is spirit in everything, because like Abby said, it all boils down to energy. And what type of energy do we want to take into our physical bodies? Do we want to take the energy of anguish, of anger, of lack, or do we want to take the energy of abundance and honor and respect, you know, and compassion, because those are all things that I have seen incorporated within the biodynamic model. Compassion and honor and respect. It's almost like values, you know, there's certain set of agricultural values that are followed. Like Abby was reading down the principles. Those are the values from the tiniest little place to no matter how many acres you're farming on.
It is. And back to your, you know, comment about Sekhem, biodynamics actually transcends all religions and cultures. And, you know, because there are common themes. I mean, that's why it has really grown in India. And with Sekhem, I mean, even at Sekhem, there's both, I think, Hindus and Muslims. I don't, you know, Islam. I don't think it's one. Mm-hmm. It's one nationality. And then indigenous people all around the world resonate with the principles of biodynamics because there are core truths in it that do transcend religion.
Yeah.
You know, it's a respect and love for nature and taking care of nature and working with nature.
And also taking care of each other.
And each other.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a whole entity. I love now Sekhem has big enterprise. I mean, they really, I forget how many people that are working there, and they now have
it's
a university.
It's 1,200 or something.
1,200 and every day. Dr. Abolish stands there and shakes each person's hand and looks them in the eye.
And they make a circle every morning.
Every morning.
Day, yeah.
You know, that is where we need to go. And that's where I believe we're going. Honest to goodness, where we really care about each other and we're growing food that has a life force in it that's way more than what we need, where there's an abundance of seed. You know, and that's what we're working towards. And I really feel of all of the systems that I've seen, you know, and I've experienced, because once again, did not exactly come from a farming background, you know, famous fine art dealers. Those are my siblings. No one farmed. No one could teach me. So I had to go through the, you know, the rocky road of the University of Hard Knocks. And then I didn't have to go any further when I came upon biodynamics.
Next up, part two of Biodynamics Demystified with host Linda Borghi and guest Abby Porter. This podcast is community supported. We thank everyone for tuning in, and a special thank you goes out to all our Patreon supporters. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe and share. You can help support us through Farm A Yard, all one word, on patreon.com.